Zeros by Peter Watts. Narrated by Neil Shaw.
Asante goes out screaming. Hell is an echo chamber, full of shouts and seawater and clanking metal. Monstrous shadows move along the bulkheads. Meshes of green light writhe on every surface. The Sahalites rise from the moon pool like creatures from some bright lagoon, firing as they emerge. Rashida's middle explodes in dark mist, and her top half topples onto the deck. Kito still dragging himself toward the spear gun on the drying rack, as though some antique fish sticker could ever fend off these monsters with their guns and their pneumatics and their little cartridges that bury themselves deep in your flesh before showing you what 500 unleashed atmospheres do to your insides. It's more than Asante's got. All he's got is his fists. He uses them, launches himself at the nearest Sahalite as she lines up Kito in her sights, swings wildly as the deck groans and drops and cants sideways. Seawater breaches the lip of the moon pool, cascades across the plating. Asante flails at the intruder on his way down. Her shot goes wide. A spiderweb blooms across the viewpoint. A thin gout of water erupts from its center, even as the glass tries to heal itself from the edges in. The last thing Asante sees is the desert hammer icon on the Sahalite's dive skin before she blows him away. 5 years. Running water, metal against metal, clanks and gurgles, lowered voices, the close, claustrophobic echo of machines in the middle distance. Asante opens his eyes. He's still in the wet room. Its ceiling blurs and clicks into focus. Plates and struts and Kito's stupid graffiti. All tautologies are tautologies, scratched into the paint. Green light still wriggles dimly across the biosteel, but the murderous energy's been bled out of it. He tries to turn his head, and can't. He barely feels his own body, as though it were made of ectoplasm. Some merest echo of solid flesh fading into non-existence somewhere around the waist. An insect's head on a human body looms over him. It speaks with two voices, English and an overlapping echo in Chui. Easy, soldier. Relax. A woman's voice and a chip one. Not Sahalite, but armed. Dangerous. Not a soldier, he wants to say. Wants to shout. It's never a good thing to be mistaken for any sort of combatant along the west coast. But he can't even whisper. He can't feel his tongue. Asante realizes that he isn't breathing. The insect woman, a dive skin he sees now, her mandibles an electrolysis rig, her compound eyes a pair of diffraction goggles, retrieves a tactical scroll from beyond his field of view and unrolls it a half meter from his face. She mutters an incantation, and it flares softly to life, renders a stacked pair of keyboards, English on top, Chui beneath. Don't try to talk, she says in both tongues. Just look at the letters. He focuses on the N. It brightens. O-T. The membrane offers up predictive spelling, speeds the transition from sack to script. Not soldier, fish farmer. Sorry. She retires the translator. The Chui keys flicker and disappear. Figure of speech. What's your name? Kojo Asante. She pushes the diffractors onto her forehead, unlatches the mandibles. They fall away and dangle to one side. She's white underneath. Is Kito? I'm sorry, no. Everyone's dead. Everyone else, he thinks, and imagines Kito mocking him one last time for insufferable pedantry.
Got him, man's voice from across the compartment. Kojo Asante Takoradi, 28, Bog Standard Aqua. Wait, combat experience, 2 years with GAF.
Asante's eyes dart frantically across the keyboard. Only farmer, not...
No worries, mate.
She lays down a reassuring hand. He can only assume it comes to rest somewhere on his body.
Everyone's seen combat hereabouts, right? You're sitting on the only reliable protein stock in 300 clicks. Stands to reason you're going to have to defend it now and again. Still.
A shoulder patch comes into view as she turns toward the other voice. West Ham Alliance.
We could put him on the list.
If you're going to do it fast. Surface contact about 2,000 meters out, closing.
She turns back to Asante.
Here's the thing. We didn't get here in time. We're not supposed to be here at all. But our CEO got wind of Sally's plans and took a little humanitarian initiative, I guess you could say. We showed up in time to scare him off and light him up. But you were all dead by then.
I wasn't.
Yeah, Kojo, you too. All dead.
You brought me back.
No.
But...
We gave your brain a jump start, that's all. You know how you can make a leg twitch when you pass a current through it? You know what galvanic means, Kojo?
He's got a PhD in molecular marine ecology, says her unseen colleague. I'm guessing yes.
You can barely feel anything, am I right? Body like a ghost? We didn't reboot the rest of you. You're just getting residual sensations from nerves that don't know they're dead yet. You're a brain in a box, Kojo. You're running on empty. But here's the thing. You don't have to be.
Hurry it up, Cat. We got 10 minutes tops.
She glances over her shoulder, back again.
We got a rig on the Levi Morgan, patch you up and keep you on ice until we get home. And we got a rig there that'll work goddamn miracles, make you better than new. But it ain't cheap, Kojo. Pretty much breaks the bank every time we do it.
Don't have money.
Don't want money. We want you to work for us. 5-year tour, maybe less, depending on how the tech works out. Then you go on your way. Nice, fat, bank balance, whole second chance. Easy gig, believe me. You're just a passenger in your own body for the hard stuff. Even boot camp's mostly autonomic. Real accelerated program.
Not West Ham.
You're not hegemon either, not anymore. You're not much of anything but rotting meat hooked up to a pair of jumper cables. I'm offering you salvation, mate. You can be born again.
Wrap it the fuck up, Cat. They're almost on top of us.
Of course, if you're not interested, I can just pull the plug, leave you the way we found you.
No, please. Yes.
Yes what, Kojo? Yes, pull the plug. Yes, leave you behind. You need to be specific about this. We're negotiating a contract here.
Yes, born again. Yes, 5-year tour. He wonders at this shiver of hesitation. This voice whispering, maybe dead is better. Perhaps it's because he is dead. Maybe all those suffocating endocrine glands just aren't up to the task of flooding his brain with the warranted elixir of fear and desperation and survival at any cost. Maybe being dead means never having to give a shit. He does, though. He may be dead, but his glands aren't. Not yet. He didn't say no. He wonders if anyone ever has.
Glory hallelujah!
Cat proclaims, reaching offstage for some unseen control, and just before everything goes black,
welcome to Zombie Corps.
Savior Machine. That's not what they call it, though.
Be clear about one thing. There's no good reason why any operation should ever put boots in the battlefield.
They call it Zero S. Strangely, the Z does not stand for zombie.
There's no good reason why any competent campaign should involve a battlefield in the first place. That's what economic engineering and cloud control are for.
The S doesn't even stand for squad.
If they fail, that's what drones and bots and TIA are for.
Zero sum. Or as NCOIC Solano puts it, a pun, right? Cogito ergo. Better than the Spaz Brigade, which was Garen's suggestion. Asante's in tactical orientation, listening to an artificial instructor that he'd almost accept as human, but for the fact that it doesn't sound bored to death.
There's only one reason you'll ever find yourself called on deck, and that's if everyone has fucked up so completely at conflict resolution that there's nothing left in the zone but a raging shitstorm.
Asante's also running up the side of a mountain. It's a beautiful route, 20 clicks of rocks and pines and mossy deadfall. There might be more green-growing things on this one slope than in the whole spreading desert of northern Africa. He wishes he could see it.
Your very presence means the mission has already failed. Your job is to salvage what you can from the wreckage.
He can't see it, though. He can't see much of anything. Asante's been blind since Reveille.
Fortunately for you, economics and cloud control and tactical AI fail quite a lot.
The blindness isn't total. He still sees light, vague shapes, and constant motion. It's like watching the world through wax paper. The eyes jiggle when you're a passenger. Of course, the eyes always jiggle, endlessly hopping from one momentary focus to the next. Saccades, they're called, but your brain usually edits out those motions, splices the clear bits together in post to serve up an illusion of continuity. Not up here, though. Up here, the sac rate goes through the roof and nothing gets lost. Total data acquisition. To Asante, it's all blizzard and blur, but that's okay. There's something in here with him that can see just fine. His arms and legs are moving, after all, and Kojo Asante isn't moving them. His other senses work fine. He feels the roughness of the rope against his palms as he climbs the wall, smells the earth and pine needles bedding the trail, still tastes a faint hint of copper from that bite on the inside of his cheek a couple clicks back. He hears with utmost clarity the voice on his audio link. His inner zombie sucks all that back, too. But eardrums don't saccade. Tactile nerves don't hop around under the flesh. Just the eyes. That's how you tell. That and the fact that your whole body has been possessed by alien hand syndrome. He calls it his evil twin. It's a name first bestowed by his dad, after catching 8-year-old Kojo sleepwalking for the third time in a week. Asante made the mistake of mentioning that once to the squad over breakfast. He's still trying to live it down. Now he tries for the hell of it, wills himself to stop for just an instant. E.T. runs and leaps and crawls as it has for the past 2 hours, unnervingly autonomous. That's the retrosplenial bypass they burned into his neocortex a month ago. A little drop gate to decouple mind from self. Just one of the mods they've etched into him with neural lace and nanotube mesh and good old-fashioned zap-and-tap. Midbrain tweaks to customize ancient prey-stalking routines, an orbitofrontal damper to ensure behavioral compliance. Can't have your better half deciding to keep the keys when you want them back, as Maddox puts it. His scalp itches with fresh scars. His head moves with a disquieting inertia, as if weighed down by a kilogram of lead and not a few bits of arsenide and carbon. He doesn't understand a tenth of it, hasn't quite come to grips with life after death. But dear God, how wonderful it is to be strong. He feels like this body could take on a whole platoon single-handed. Sometimes he can feel this way for 5 or 10 whole minutes, before remembering the names of other corpses who never got in on the deal. Without warning, E.T. dances to one side, brings its arms up, and suddenly Asante can see. Just for a millisecond, a small clear break in a sea of fog. A Lockheed pit bull cresting the granite outcropping to his left, legs spreading, muzzle spinning to bear. In the next instant, Asante's blind again, recoil vibrating along his arm like a small earthquake. His body hasn't even broken stride.
Ah, target acquisition, the instructor remarks. Enjoy the view.
It takes this opportunity to summarize the basics. Target locks the only time when the eyes focus on a single point long enough for passengers to look out, before segueing into a spiel on line-of-sight networking. Asante isn't sure what the others are hearing. Tawana, the only other raw recruit, is probably enduring the same 101 monologue. Kalmus might have moved up to field trauma by now. Garen's on an engineering track. Maddox has told Asante that he'll probably end up in bioweapons, given his background. It takes 19 months to train a field-ready specialist. 0S, do it in 7. Asante's legs have stopped moving. On all sides he hears the sound of heavy breathing. Lieutenant Metzinger's voice tickles the space between his ears.
Passengers, you may enter the cockpit.
The switch is buried in the visual cortex and tied to the power of imagination. They call it a mandala. Each recruit chooses their own and keeps it secret. No chance of a master key for some wily foe to drop onto a billboard in the heat of battle. Not even the techs know the patterns. The implants were conditioned on double-blind trial and error. Something personal, they said. Something unique. Easy to visualize. Asante's mandala is a sequence of four words in sans-serif font. He summons it now. All tautologies are tautologies. And the world clicks back into sudden jarring focus. He stumbles, though he wasn't moving. Right on cue, his left hand starts twitching. They're halfway up the mountain, in a sloping, sunny meadow. There are flowers here. Insects. Everything smells alive. Silano raises trembling arms to the sky. Kalmus flumps on the grass, recovering from exertions barely felt when better halves were in control. Exertions that have left them weak and wasted despite twice normal Mito counts, and AMPK agonists, and a dozen other tweaks to put them in the upper tail of the upper tail. Acosta drops beside her, grinning at the sunshine. Garen kicks at a punky log, and an actual goddamn snake slithers into the grass, a ribbon of yellow and black with a flickering tongue. Tijuana's at Asante's shoulder, as scarred and bald as he is.
Beautiful, huh?
Her right eye's a little off kilter. Asante resists the impulse to stare by focusing on the bridge of her nose.
Not beautiful enough to make up for 2 hours with a hood over my head.
That's Sax, indulging in some pointless bitching.
Would it kill them to give us a video feed?
Or even just put us to sleep?
Kalmus grumbles. They both know it's not that simple. The brain's a tangle of wires looping from basement to attic and back again. Turn off the lights in the living room, and your furnace might stop working. Even pay-per-view's a non-starter. In theory, there's no reason why they couldn't bypass those jiggling eyes entirely. Pipe a camera feed directly to the cortex, but their brains are already so stuffed with implants that there isn't enough real estate left over for non-essentials. That's what Maddox says, anyway.
I don't really give a shit, Acosta's saying.
The tick at the corner of his mouth makes his grin a twitchy, disconcerting thing.
I'd put up with twice the offline time if there was always a view like this at the end of it.
Acosta lives for any scrap of nature he can find. His native Guatemala lost most of its canopy to firestorm carousels back in 42.
So what's in it for you?
Tijuana asks. It takes a moment for Asante to realize the question's for him.
Excuse me?
Acosta's nature boy. Kalmus thinks she's gonna strike it rich when they declassify the tech.
This is news to Asante.
Why'd you sign up?
He doesn't quite know how to answer. Judging by his own experience, Zero S is not something you sign up for. Zero S is something that finds you. It's an odd question, a private question. It brings up things he'd rather not dwell upon. It brings up things he already dwells on too much. Thankfully, Maddox chooses that moment to radio up from Cote.
Okay, everybody, symptom check, Solano.
The corporal looks at his forearms.
Pretty good, less jumpy than normal.
Kalmus, I've got a...
She stammers, struggles, finally spits in frustration.
Fuck! I'll just put down the usual aphasia, Maddox says. Garen!
Vision flickers every 5-10 minutes.
That's an improvement.
Gets better when I exercise. Better blood flow, maybe.
Interesting,
Maddox says.
Tijuana!
I see you, God, I see you!
Sax is on the ground, writhing, his eyes rolled in their sockets, his fingers claw handfuls of earth.
I see!
He cries and lapses into gibberish. His head thrashes. Spittle flies from his mouth. Tijuana and Silano move in, but the audio link crackles with the voice of God.
Stand away! Everyone stand back now!
And everyone obeys because God speaks with the voice of Lieutenant David Metzinger and you do not want to fuck with him. God's breath is blowing down from heaven, from the rotors of a medical chopper, beating the air with impossible silence, even though they all see it now. They all see it. There's no need for stealth mode. There never was. It's always there, just out of sight, just in case. Sax has stopped gibbering. His face is a rictus, his spine a drawn bow. The chopper lands, its whoop 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 barely audible even 10 meters away. It vomits medics and a stretcher and glossy black Easter egg drones with jointed insect legs folded to their bellies. The Zero S step back. The medics close in and block the view. Metzinger again.
Okay, meet Sax. Everyone into the back seat. Return to Cote.
Silano turns away, eyes already jiggling in their sockets. Tijuana and Kalmus go over a moment later. Garen slaps Asante's back on the way out.
Gotta go, ma'am. Happens, you know.
And vanishes into his own head. The chopper lifts Sax into the heavens.
Private Asante, now!
He stands alone in the clearing, summons his mandala, falls into blindness. His body turns, his legs move, something begins to run him downhill. The artificial instructor, always sensitive to context, begins a lecture about dealing with loss on the battlefield. It's all for the best, he knows. It's safest to be a passenger at times like this. All these glitches, these side effects, they never manifest in zombie mode, which makes perfect sense. That being where they put all the money. Station to station. Sometimes he still wakes in the middle of the night, shocked back to consciousness by the renewed knowledge that he still exists, as if his death was some near miss that didn't really sink in until days or weeks afterward, leaving him weak in the knees and gasping for breath. He catches himself calling his mandala, a fight-flight reaction to threat stimuli long since expired. He stares at the ceiling, forces calm into panic, takes comfort from the breathing of his fellow recruits, tries not to think about Quito and Rashida, tries not to think at all. Sometimes he finds himself in the commons, alone but for the inevitable drone hovering just around the corner, ready to raise alarms and inject drugs should he suffer some delayed and violent reaction to any of 100 recent mods. He watches the world through one of CFB Cote's crippled terminals. They can surf but never send. He slips through wires and fiber op, bounces off geosynchronous relays all the way back to Ghana. Satcams down on the dizzying Escher arcology of the Cape Universitas hubs, piggybacks on drones wending through Makola's east, marvels anew at the giant gengineered snails, big as a centrifuge, some of them, that first ignited his passion for biology when he was 6. He haunts familiar streets where the kenki and fish always tasted better when the Chinese printed them, even though the recipes must have been copied from the locals. The glorious chaos of the street drummers during a dye. He never seeks out friends or family. He doesn't know if it's because he's not ready, or because he has already moved past them. He only knows not to awaken things that have barely gone to sleep. Zero sum. A new life. Also a kind of game used, more often than not, to justify armed conflict. Also, null existence. If your tastes run to the Latin. They loom over a drowning subdivision long abandoned to the rising waters of Galveston Bay. Cathedral-sized storage tanks streaked with rust and ruin, 12-story filtration towers, masses of twisting pipe big enough to walk through. Garen sidles up beside him.
Looks like a crab raped an octopus.
Your boys seem twitchy, the sheriff says.
Asante clenches his fist to control the tremor.
They hopped on something?
Metzinger ignores the question.
Have they made any demands?
Usual. Stop the rationing or they blow it up.
The sheriff shakes his head, moves to mop his brow, nearly punches himself in the face when his decrepit bombardier exoskeleton fratzes and overcompensates.
Everything's gone to shit since the Edwards dried up. They respond to a water shortage by blowing up a desalination facility?
The sheriff snorts.
Folks always make sense where you come from, Lieutenant.
They reviewed the plant specs down to the rivets on the way here, or at least their zombies did, utterly silent, borrowed eyes flickering across video feeds and backgrounders that Asante probably wouldn't have grasped, even if he had been able to see them. All Asante knows, by way of the impoverished briefings Metzinger doles out to those back in tourist class, is that the facility was brought from Qatar back when paint still peeled and metal still rusted, when digging viscous fossils from the ground left you rich enough to buy the planet. And that it's falling into disrepair now that none of those things are true anymore. Pretty much a microcosm of the whole Texit experience, he reflects.
They planned it out, the sheriff admits. Packed a shitload of capacitators in there with them, hooked them to Jenny's, banked them in all the right places. We send in quads, EMP just drops them.
He glances back over his shoulder to where, if you squint hard enough, a heat shimmer rising from the asphalt might almost assume the outline of a resting Chinook transport.
Probably risky using exos unless they're hardened.
We won't be using exos.
Far as we can tell, some of them are dug in by the condensers, others right next to the heat exchangers. We try to microwave them out, all the pipes explode. Might as well blow the place ourselves.
Firepower?
You name it. 6 hours, Heckler Cokes, my sushis. I think one of them has a scorp. All kinetic, far as we know. Nothing you could fry.
Got anything on legs?
They've got a wolfhound in there, 46G.
I meant you, Metzinger says.
The sheriff winces.
Nearest 3 hours away. Gimped leg.
And at Metzinger's look,
Bodine pulled out a few years back. We've been having trouble getting replacement parts.
What about local law enforcement? You can't be the only.
Half of them are law enforcement. How'd you think they got the wolfhound?
The sheriff lowers his voice, although there aren't any other patriots within earshot.
Son, you don't think we'd have invited you in if we'd had any other choice? I mean, Jesus! We've got enough trouble maintaining law and order as it is. If word ever got out, we had to bring in outside help over a goddamn domestic dispute.
Don't sweat it. We don't wear name tags.
Metzinger turns to Solano.
Take it away, Sergeant Major.
Solano addresses the troops as Metzinger disappears into the cloak Chinook.
Say your goodbyes, everybody. Autopilots in 30.
Asante sighs to himself. Those poor bastards don't stand a chance. He can't even bring himself to blame them. Driven by desperation, hunger, the lack of any other options, like the Sahelites who murdered him back at the end of another life. Damned, ultimately, by the sin of being born into a wasteland that could no longer feed them. Solano raises one hand.
Mark!
Asante calls forth his mandala. The world goes to gray. His bad hand calms and steadies on the forestock of his weapon. This is going to be ugly. He's glad he won't be around to see it. Heroes. He does afterward, of course. They all do, as soon as they get back to Côté. They're still learning. The world is their classroom.
Back in the Cenozoic, all anybody cared about was reflexes, Second Lieutenant Oliver Maddox, sorcerer's apprentice to the rarely seen Major Emma Rossiter of the Holy Order of Neuroengineering, speaks with the excitement of a 9-year-old at his own birthday party. Double tap, dash, down, crawl, observe fire. All that stuff your body learns to do without thinking when someone yells contact. The whole program was originally just about speeding up those macros. They never really appreciated that the subconscious mind thinks as well as reacts.
It analyzes. I was telling them that years ago, but they never really got it until now.
Asante has never met them. They never write, they never call, they certainly never visit. Presumably, they sign a lot of checks.
Here, though, we have a perfect example of the tactical genius of the zombie mind.
Their buds recorded everything. Maddox has put it all together post-mortem, a greatest hits mix with remote thermal and PEA and a smattering of extraparental algorithms to fill in the gaps. Now he sets up the game board, walls, floors, industrial viscera, all magically translucent, and initializes the people inside.
So you've got 18 heavily armed hostiles dug in at all the right choke points.
Homunculi glow red at critical junctures.
You've got a jamming field in effect, so you can't share telemetry unless you're line of sight. You've got an EMP-hardened robot programmed to attack anything so much as squeaks, deafened along the whole spectrum, so even if we had the backdoor codes, it wouldn't hear them.
The Wolfhound icon is especially glossy, probably lifted from Bodine's promotional archive.
And you've got some crazy fucker with a dead man switch that'll send the whole place sky high the moment his heart stops. Or even if he just thinks you're getting too close to the flag. You don't even know about that going in. And yet...
Maddox starts the clock. Inside the labyrinth, icons begin to dance and fast forward.
Garen's first up, and he completely blows it. Not only does he barely graze the target, probably doesn't even draw blood, but he leaves his silencer disengaged. Way to go, Garen. You failed to neutralize your target, and now the whole building knows where you are.
Asante remembers that gunshot echoing through the facility. He remembers his stomach dropping away.
Now here comes one of Bubba's buddies around the corner, and Garen misses again. Nicked to the shoulder this time. And here comes the real badass of the bunch. That wolfhound's been homing in on Garen's shots, and that motherfucker is armed and hot and...
The 46G rounds the corner. It does not target Garen. It lights up the insurgents. Bubba and his buddy collapse into little red piles of pixel dust.
They did not see that coming!
Maddox exults.
Fragged by their own robot! How do you suppose that happened?
Asante frowns.
So, two baddies down. Garen's already up the ladder and onto this catwalk before the robot gets a bead on him, but Tawana's at the other end, way across the building, and they go LOS for about half a second.
A bright thread flickers between their respective icons.
Before Tawana drops back down to ground level and starts picking off Bubba's over by the countercurrent assembly. And she turns out to be just as shitty a shot as Garen, and just as sloppy with her silencer.
Gunfire everywhere, from everyone. Asante remembers being blind and shitting bricks, wondering what kind of a boa would make such an idiot mistake until the Ransetti came up in his own hands, until he felt the recoil and heard the sound of his own shot echoing like a 130-decibel bullseye on his back. He wondered at the time how and why someone had sabotaged everyone's silencers like that. Maddox is still deep in the play.
The bad guys have heard the commotion and are starting to reposition. By now, Asante and Solano have picked up the shitty shot bug, and the Bodine's still running around tearing up the guys on its own side. All this opens a hole that Calmus breezes through. Anyone want to guess the odds she just happened to be so perfectly positioned? Which buys her a clean shot at the guy with the dead man switch, who she drops with a perfect cervical shot, completely paralyzes the poor bastard, but... leaves his heart beating strong and steady. Here we see Calmus checking him over and disabling his now useless doomsday machine. This all took less than 5 minutes, people. I mean, it was 18 from in to out, but you're basically mopping up after 5. And just before the credits roll, Calmus strolls up to the wolfhound, calm as you please, and pets the fucker. Puts him right to sleep. Galveston PD gets their robot back without a scratch. 5 minutes. Fucking magic.
So,
Garen looks around.
How'd we do it?
Show 'em, Callie.
Calmus holds up a cufflink.
Apparently, I took this off dead man guy.
Dog whistles, R's and K's, Maddox grins. 50 kilohertz, inaudible to pilot or passenger. You don't put your robot into rabid mode without some way of telling friend from foe, right? Wearing one of these pins, Wolfie doesn't look at you twice. Lose that pin, and it rips your throat out in a fucking instant. Your better halves could have gone for clean, quiet kills that would have left the remaining forces still dug in, still fortified, and not going anywhere. But one of the things that fortified them was Bodine's baddest battle bot. So your better halves didn't go for clean, quiet kills. They went for noise and panic. They shot the dog whistles, drew in the dogs, let it attack its own masters. Other side changes position in response. You herded the robot, and the robot herded the insurgents right into your crosshairs. It was precision out of chaos. And it's even more impressive because you had no comms except for the occasional optical sync when you happen to be LOS. Gotta be the messiest, spottiest network you could imagine, and if I hadn't seen it myself, I'd say it was impossible. But somehow you zombies kept updated on each other's sit reps. Each one knew what it had to do to achieve an optimal outcome, assuming all the others did likewise. And the group strategy just kind of emerged. Nobody giving orders. Nobody saying a goddamn word. Asante sees it now, as the replay loops and restarts. There's a kind of beauty to it. The movement of nodes, the intermittent web of laser light flickering between them, the smooth coalescence of signal from noise. It's more than a dance, more than teamwork. It's more like a disturbed organism, like the digits of a hand moving together. Mind you, this is not what we say if anyone asks, Maddox adds. What we say is that every scenario in which the Galveston plant went down predicted a tipping point across the whole post-Texit landscape. We point to 95% odds of widespread rioting and social unrest on West Ham's very doorstep, a fate which Zero S has, nice and quietly, prevented. Not bad for your first field deployment.
Tijuana raises a hand.
Who would ask, exactly?
It's a good question. In the 13 months since Asante joined Zero Sum, no outsider has ever appeared on the grounds of CFB Côté, which isn't especially surprising, given that, according to the public record search he did a few weeks back, anyway, CFB Côté had been closed for over 20 years. Maddox smiles faintly.
Anyone with a vested interest in the traditional chain of command.
Where are we now? Asante awakens in the infirmary, standing at the foot of Carlos Acosta's bed. To his right, a half-open door spills dim light into the darkness beyond. A wedge of worn linoleum fading out from the doorway, a tiny red exit sign glowing in the void above a stairwell. To his left, a glass wall looks into neurosurgery. Jointed teleops hang from the ceiling in there, like mantis limbs with impossibly fragile fingers. Lasers, needles and nanotubes, atomic force manipulators delicate enough to coax individual atoms apart. Zero S have gone under those knives more times than any of them can count. Surgery by software, mostly. Occasionally, by human doctors phoning it in from undisclosed locations, old-school cutters who never visit in the flesh for all the times they've cut into Asante's. Acosta's on his back, eyes closed. He looks almost at peace. Even his facial tic has quieted. He's been here 3 days now, ever since losing his right arm to a swarm of smart flechettes over in Heraklion. It's no big deal. He's growing it back with a little help from some imported salamander DNA and a steroid-infused aminoglucose drip. He'll be good as new in 3 weeks, as good as he's ever been since Zero S got him anyway. Back in his rack in half that time. Meanwhile, it's a tricky balance.
His metabolism may be boosted into the jet stream, but it's all for tissue growth. There's barely enough left over to power a trip to the bathroom. Kojo Asante wonders why he's standing here at 0300. Maddox says the occasional bit of sleepwalking isn't anything to get too worried about, especially if you're already prone to it. Nobody suffered a major episode in months, not since well before Galveston. These days, the tweaks seem mainly about fine-tuning. Rossiter's long since called off the just-in-case bots that once dogged their every unscripted step. Even lets them leave the base now and then, when they've been good. You still have to expect the occasional lingering side effect, though. Asante glances down at the telltale tremor in his own hand, seizes it gently with the other, and holds firm until the nerves quiet. Looks back at his friend. Acosta's eyes are open. They don't look at him. They don't settle long enough to look at anything, as far as Asante can tell. They jump and twitch in Acosta's face, back, forth, up, down, up.
Carl?
Asante says softly.
How's it going, man?
The rest of that body doesn't even twitch. Acosta's breathing remains unchanged. He doesn't speak. Zombies aren't big on talking. They're smart, but nonverbal, like those split-brain patients who understand words but can't utter them. Something about the integration of speech with consciousness. Written language is easier. The zombie brain doesn't take well to conventional grammar and syntax, but they've developed a kind of visual pidgin that Maddox claims is more efficient than English. Apparently, they use it at all the briefings. Maddox also claims they're working on a kind of time-sharing arrangement, some way to divvy up custody of Broca's area between the frontoparietal and the retrosplenial.
Someday soon, maybe, you'll literally be able to talk to yourself, he says,
but they haven't got there yet. A tack pad on the bedside table glows with the dim matrix of Sijin symbols. Asante places it under Acosta's right hand.
Carl?
Nothing.
Just thought I'd see how you were. You take care.
He tiptoes to the door, sets trembling fingers on the knob, steps into the darkness of the hallway, navigates back to his rack by touch and memory. Those eyes. It's not like he hasn't seen it a million times before, but all those other times his squadmate's eyes blurred and danced in upright bodies, powerful, autonomous things that moved. Seeing that motion embedded in such stillness, watching eyes struggle as if trapped in muscle and bone, as if looking up from some shallow grave where they haven't quite been buried alive. Terrified. That's how they looked. Terrified. We are the dead. Specialist Tara Kalmus has disappeared. Rossiter was seen breaking the news to Maddox just this morning, a conversation during which Maddox morphed miraculously from he of the perpetually goofy smile into Lieutenant Stoneface. He refused to talk about it with any of the grunts. Silano managed to buttonhole Rossiter on her way back to the helipad, but could only extract the admission that Kalmus had been reassigned. Metzinger tells them to stop asking questions. He makes it an order. But Estivana points out, when Asante finds her that evening, sitting with her back propped against a pallet of machine parts in the loading bay, you can run all sorts of online queries without ever using a question mark.
Fellow corpse? Fellow corpse?
It's been their own private salutation since learning how much they have in common. Tijuana died during a realist attack in Havana. Worst vacation ever, she says. They're the only Zero S, so far at least, to return from the dead. The others hold them a little in awe because of it. The others also keep a certain distance.
Garin was last to see her, over at the memory hole.
Tijuana's wearing a pair of smart specs tuned to the public net. It won't stop any higher-ups who decide to look over her shoulder, but at least her activity won't be logged by default.
Chatting up some redhead with a Hansen geothermal logo on her jacket.
Two nights ago. Metzinger let everyone off the leash as a reward for squashing a realist attack on the G8G constellation. They went down to Banff for some meat space R&R.
So?
Specklight paints Tiwana's cheeks with small flickering auroras.
So, a BPD drone found a woman matching that description dead outside a public fuck cubby 2 blocks south of there. Same night.
Aye.
Asante squats down beside her as Tiwana pushes the specks onto her forehead. Her wonky eye jiggles at him.
Yeah.
She takes a breath, lets it out.
Nikki Steckman, according to the DNA.
So how?
They don't say. Just asking witnesses to come forward.
Have any?
They left together. Deked into an alley. No further surveillance record. Which is odd.
Is it really?
Asante murmurs.
No, I guess not.
They sit in silence for a moment.
What do you think?
She asks at last.
Maybe Steckman didn't like it rough, and things got out of hand. You know Kelly, she doesn't always take no for an answer.
No to what? We're all on anti-Libinels. Why would she even be?
She'd never kill someone over.
Maybe she didn't,
Tiwana says. He blinks.
You think she flipped?
Maybe it wasn't her fault. Maybe the Augs kicked in on their own somehow, like a reflex. Callie saw an imminent threat, or something her better half interpreted that way. Grabbed the keys, took care of it.
It's not supposed to work like that.
It wasn't supposed to fry Sack's central nervous system either.
Come on, Soph. That's ancient history. They wouldn't deploy us if they hadn't fixed those problems.
Really?
Her bad eye looks pointedly at his bad hand.
Legacy glitches don't count.
Nerves nicked during surgery. A stray milliamp leaking into the fusiform gyrus. Everyone's got at least one.
Maddox says.
Oh, sure. Maddox is always gonna tidy up. Next week, next month. Once the latest tweaks have settled, or there isn't some brush fire to put out over in come fucking Chatka. Meanwhile, the glitches don't even manifest in zombie mode, so why should he care?
If they thought the implants were defective, they wouldn't keep sending us out on missions.
Ah.
Tiwana spreads her hands.
You say mission. I say field test. I mean, sure, camaraderie's great. We're the cutting edge. We can be zero S. But look at us, Joe. Silano was a Rio insurgent. Galmas was up on insubordination charges. They scraped you and me off the ground like roadkill. None of us are what you'd call summa cum laude.
Isn't that the point? That anybody can be a super soldier?
Or at least anybody.
We're lab rats, Joe. They don't want to risk frying their West Point grads with a beta release, so they're working out the bugs on us first. If the program was ready to go wide, we wouldn't still be here. Which means...
She heaves a sigh.
It's the Ox.
At least I hope it's the Ox.
You hope?
You'd rather believe Callie just went berserk and killed a civilian for no reason?
He tries to ignore a probably psychosomatic tingle at the back of his head.
Rosita wouldn't be talking reassignment if she had.
He admits.
She'd be talking court-martial.
She'll never talk court-martial. Not where we're concerned.
Really?
Think about it. You ever see any politician come by to make sure the taxpayers' money's being well spent? You ever see a commissioned officer walking the halls who wasn't Metzinger or Maddox or Rossiter?
So we're off the books.
It's hardly a revelation.
We're so far off the books, we might as well be cave paintings. We don't even know our own tooth-to-tail ratio. 90% of our support infrastructure's off-site. It's all robots and teleops. We don't even know who's cutting into our own heads.
She leans close in the deepening gloom, fixes him with her good eye.
This is voodoo, Joe. Maybe the program started small with that knee-jerk stuff, but now? You and I, we're literal fucking zombies. We're reanimated corpses dancing on strings. And if you think Persephone Q Public is gonna be fine with that, you have a lot more faith in her than I do. I don't think Congress knows about us. I don't think Parliament knows about us. I bet SOCOM doesn't even know about us past some line in a budget that says psychological research. I don't think they want to know. And when something's that dark, are they really going to let anything as trivial as a judicial process drag it into the light?
Asante shakes his head.
Still has to be accountability, some kind of internal process.
There is. You disappear, and they tell everyone you've been reassigned.
He thinks for a bit.
So what do we do?
First, we riot in the mess hall. Then we march on Ottawa, demanding equal rights for corpses. She rolls her eyes.
We don't do anything. Maybe you forgot. We died. We don't legally exist anymore. And unless you got a way better deal than me, the only way for either of us to change that is keep our heads down until we get our honorable discharges. I do not like being dead. I would very much like to go back to being officially alive someday. Until then...
She takes the specs off her head, powers them down.
We watch our fucking step.